Okay, so good afternoon, and I don't know how many were here before or not. My name is Aaron Lopiansky. I teach at the Yeshiva Greater Washington, the Yeshiva Gdola. And once again, I want to commend the students who've decided to make a Yomian for Tefillah. I think it is very important, and it's a topic that, because we always daven all the time, we don't ever get a really good appreciation for things. I want to frame the issue that I want to address now in the following way. And actually, Yitzchak had sort of segued into it in a way that I hadn't anticipated. We spoke last, the first session, we spoke about tefillah being a sense of the other. So he said, so we get up and we ask God for everything we need, we want, and so on. Is that about us, or is that about him? Very good question. Let's ask it a little more sharply, a little less religiously. God either knows what our problems are, or he's not God. God either created our problems, or he's not God. So what's the point of asking him? Are we testing his wisdom and saying, well, I know that you thought that I should be ill, but I think I should be healthy. So I don't think that that's makes a lot of sense, a whole lot of sense. Or, you know, God, you might be very busy lately. I didn't realize there's like a little war going on in the Middle East with a lot of rockets, and we've been kind of saying Tehillim, but we haven't got much response. So is that okay? Or, you know, if you want it, this is the best, and what's the point of praying for it? Praying puts us into a certain conundrum of either or. If God is God, then what's the point of praying? And if he's not, then what's the point of praying? I would like also to remark on the fact that we have three times a day, same thing, over and over again. I mean, you know, it's like when we go shopping, anybody who's a little astute goes once a week to the store, twice a week to the store. You don't keep stocking up. I mean, we could hand in once a week, I'm sure. Most of the things we need, we could take care of once a week, informing God of exactly what we need. What's three times a day for? Very, very, very strange setup. And it's something that down deep bothers us. Like, how often, how much, and why? The truth is, it's a very, very primitive, unfortunately, being part of society around us, even religious society, sometimes rubs off on us. And we have a mindset. We know that all the little children now are preparing their lists for Santa, or maybe they're preparing it for Black Friday, and you know what they need, and good old Santa looks it over and brings it to them, and we sort of get that feeling, except that our Santa needs a list three times a day, and he tells us what to write on the list, which is really, really not fair. And it's something, it's a very primitive mindset, and that's where we live. We live with Goyim, we live with their culture, and it seeps in, and it's nominally very religious culture, so what's the problem? So I want to start with one Gemara, and then I want to use a certain Midrash to flesh out an idea and understanding that will give us a much deeper understanding of what's happening, what are we doing exactly. The Gemara in Brachos says, it's a Gemara in Daf Lamed Hey, in Ketzer Mevarchin, a very famous Gemara, Amar Reb Chanina bar Papa, Kol Hanenem in Olam Hazeh Belo Bracha, if someone enjoys something in this world without making a bracha, Ke'ilu Gozel LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Uknes Yisrael. It's as if he's stealing from God and from Klal Yisrael. The idea of stealing from God is something that doesn't really mean much. If God has everything and needs nothing, when, you know, for the man who has everything and needs nothing, we always have a problem getting a present for that person. Like, if God, what does it mean to steal from God? What is it that he needs in this world, and what is it that he's, we're depriving him of? I mean, he can make everything, he creates everything. So, by definition, if somebody has a machine, if we could picture a machine that creates endless amount of chocolate, could we steal chocolate from that person? It doesn't make any sense. So I would like to use for an illustration Medrash that we might have actually seen in Rashi a few weeks ago. And once we understand the point of that Medrash, we'll get a deeper understanding of the point we're dealing with. It says Dor HaMabul were terrible people. They sinned in a lot of ways. Relations, idolatry, and the main thing was theft. But it was theft with a special description. It was called Hamas. No relationship. Maybe it is a good example. Hamas. And the Chazal explained what exactly is Hamas. And it's very interesting. There's a halachic description of Hamas. Halachically, the description of Hamas is as follows. It doesn't say it over there in Noach, but it's brought in halach. This is a very common halachic description. If I take something from you, that's stealing. If, let's say, I like this pencil that Yitzhak has here, and I say, Yitzhak, how much would you sell it for? And he says, nothing. I'm not going to sell it. And I grab it from him and put down $100. I think everybody will agree that he got the better end of the deal for that. Throw the pencil and you'll, $100 I think will, that's called Hamas. And it's an Isser. And it makes me puzzle for being a witness. Even though I lost, he gained. The Rashi, when he describes Hamas at the Mabul, gives a different illustration. It's the Medrash. Halachically, theft has a threshold. Theft is at least one pruta's worth, which is about a nickel's worth or so. Less than that, you're not allowed to, but halachically, you don't have to return it. It sort of falls under what's the threshold of gzela, of theft. So what people would do is they would see somebody selling some vegetable, some cheap vegetable. Well, let's say parsley or whatever it was. And everybody would run, grab a little bit, less than a pruta's worth, and off with it until the poor fellow had nothing left. And that was the form of Hamas. What exactly was that expressing? I mean, is it really worth anything? I mean, I assume that if it's less than a pruta is something like a nickel these days, that's the range of coin between a nickel and a dime. What was the point of that exercise? There's something mean about it, terribly mean, but what was the point of that? So let's understand a little bit about a very fundamental aspect of human nature, and then we'll get the idea of what we're dealing with. Imagine you have a box of tissues and someone asks you for a tissue. I highly doubt anyone here would say no. A, because it's not polite, and B, tissue is not the end of the world. If I see his pencil laying there and I ask him, I need to scribble down something or other, I'd be fine with it. Let's say somebody keeps taking tissues or keeps taking my pencil and jotting down something without asking me. How would you feel? Give me a word. What would you feel? Agitated. What?
Agitated.
Violated? Upset? Why? What exactly, is it really, are you losing anything on the amount of lead that it takes for me to jot down something? I'm not losing anything. A tissue, we go through a box of tissues, it's worth nothing. So what is it exactly, the guy who keeps taking the stuff without asking permission, what exactly, I would give him permission, I wouldn't blink. The answer is because more than money and possession in terms of what I possess, the idea of me and mine are extremely, extremely significant to us. Self is the most significant thing we have. We are. And surviving and existing is something we will do anything. That's the force of human will, is to survive and exist. And very closely linked to self and existence is possession. me and mine are very, very close, psychologically, emotionally. So if somebody, the loss of the tissue or of a match or of a little lead is meaningless. That's not the point of it. The point is he is violating my possession, by extension, self. If my possessions are worth nothing, then myself is worth nothing. You find, like when Haman decreed on the Jews, lahashmid laharog laabed, to kill all the Jews, ushlolom lavoz, and to take their booty, and you know, to sort of pogrom the booty and to take it all. It's sort of the final extinction of the person's self is where the his doesn't exist anymore. He doesn't have possessions anymore. It's a certain way of destroying the person and the being an entity. So the sense of self and possession is very, very inherent to us, and the sense of violating it is bad. And it, in a certain sense, it's a sort of an emotional, I don't want to be dramatic, but murder, it's sort of it's in that world of that. Let's go a step further with that. What is, whenever I thank somebody, what am I doing? What's a thank worth? What exactly is the process of saying thank you? You know, it's part of the stuff we're brought up with, and when so please means I'm asking permission. What does the word thank you mean more than anything else? So in Hebrew, which is a language that really has built into the words the inner truth of it, we find a remarkable construction of the word for thanks in Hebrew. The word for thanks is lehodot, toda, lehodot, hodaya. The word for admission is hoda'a, and you know, modeh b'miktzat, hu hoda ala pesha, hu hoda shezayahu. Hoda means to confess. It's something that in English is an unthinkable combination. Confessions are criminal and thank yous are wonderfully polite. But Hebrew has identified correctly, what is it, why does a person insist on a thank you? Because a thank you is a statement that this really belongs to you. So when I say thank you, it's the conclusion. Could I please use the pencil? Yes, you may use the pencil. Thank you. The pencil that I used was yours. It's sort of a closure, and therefore, even if I used it, but I used it by your grace, and therefore, it is yours really. And I'm sort of just kind of doing it by your graciousness, and I haven't taken from you anything. Because when I do it by your graciousness, it's you. So we find the way in which we respect the other person's possession is by permission and by acknowledgement. So the word thanks, like todah, like hodayah, means acknowledging, stating the truth. Confession, like hodaah, is when I'm stating the truth about a crime I did. Hodaya is when I'm stating the truth about the possession of something. But both of them are the same idea. Acknowledging the truth of something being someone else's and so on. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us into this world. And the first thing, our first struggle with that is to be part of this world, we need to have a sense of self. We want to be us. We want to survive. We want to exist. And yet, somewhere down the line, God is really the reason for my existence. I would like to think that I can earn my own living. And if I go into the world and I produce something, it's mine. I plow the field, I bring out fruit and produce, so that's mine. And that's my sense of self. What is our relationship between that and God? We're not supposed to just sit and rely on God. We're supposed to do a lot of hishtadlus. And especially after other missions chased out of Gan Eden, it's Bezeah Sapecha Tocha Lechem. So we really live in this world with a sense of self and hard-earned stuff. We really have to earn our way. The way in which we resolve that conflict is A, by asking, B, by acknowledging. So I wake up in the morning, I feel good, I'm alive, I'm breathing, I'm ready to get going, to move on to a new day. I'm sharing that. Part of it is me, and the first word a Jew says is Moda ani lefanecha. I didn't wake up this morning breathing because I taught myself to breathe, or because I built my lungs, or because I know the system. I woke up this morning because I was given life, and therefore the first word a Jew says, doesn't he have to wash Mitel Sidayim for it, is Moda ani lefanecha. The word Moda, I thank, and I acknowledge. Yes, I'm a living person who's got his own self and own sense of self because you've given it to me. That, in a nutshell, is the essence of tefillah. It's not to ask God to supply to us some needs that we have, because like we said before, that's silly. God knows it all. He's created the need. If someone's not well, we believe that Hashem is the one who's actually made it happen. But before I do anything, I need to ask permission. And that's what the Gemara means, that if a person eats without a bracha, he's stealing. It's not stealing because God is missing something, or God needs that apple, doesn't need the apple, doesn't need apples, and he could have an infinite amount of apples. It's silly. That's not. But the point is, why do you take it as if it's yours? Nothing is yours. You came into this world with nothing. Your existence was because God programmed two cells to form you. You, your conscious, everything about you is part and parcel of a divine inspiration. Once that's taken care of, God doesn't want us to sit back and say, well, God will supply, everything's come from God, it's wonderful, and so on and so forth. Now I can go out and take, but I'm taking because I said, could I use it? And I need to come back again and say, I appreciate it. Thank you. The thank you means it's the closure to that acknowledgement. Because sometimes when we start using that pencil a lot, we forget that we needed to ask permission. When you give it back and you say thank you, one of the problems, good problems, of society for us in our society we live is the sense of entitlement. In Europe, and to Europe I'm talking about Eastern Europe where my parents grew up, life was very, very rough. You had nothing. You really had nothing. And everything was a struggle. Everything was a hassle. And you took nothing for granted. Today, everything comes our way. A story that particularly stuck in my mind was, one of the boys at the yeshiva came from a very wealthy family. His parents paid his college tuition and also promised to pay his, they also indicated that they would pay for law school, totally. He worked hard, and he got the marks he needed to get into Georgetown, which is a good school, and the law school. And he got into a fight with his parents, and his parents threatened to not pay for his law school. The boy, who was not a bad boy, but I think very insensitive in understanding, said, they have no right to do that. I earned it. I got the LSATs, the grades, and so on and so forth. And I said to him, one second, your grades earned you the right of entry into Georgetown Law School. They didn't earn you the money. Your parents earned the money, and they owe you nothing. There was a sense of, like, as they say in Ivrit, Magieli, it's mine. And I need to, there's no way, you can't take it back from me. And we have so many things for granted that it seems unfair. I remember I was listening to, I don't know if it was on a TV clip or on a radio. In Israel, they had a year and a half ago, they had, they had Occupy Wall Street movement. They had something, a counterpart to that in Tel Aviv. And they were interviewing somebody, and I think it was a woman. She said, I graduated as a social worker. The government owes it to me to find placement in my field and a job that I'm comfortable with. And I was saying to myself, they owe it to you? This is a new one on me. I wasn't aware that the world is so heavily in debt that they owe you everything. But that's why, thank God we grew up with a lot, and we normally feel things are ours. And the biggest obstacle between the relationship between us and Hashem lies in that. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into us to be independent, and that's really who we are. We have a sense of self. The sense of mine encroaches on God's territory. We don't want something that's forbidden, but a lot of things are magieli. So tefillah is, and that's why three times a day. The idea is, if the three times a day are the three times when there is some change, some perceptible change, the sun rises, a new day is coming, there's a sense of newness, the sun begins to descend, and the sun is gone. Those are three points of time where we're aware of a transition, where it's time to say, it's so like if I ask him for the pencil, poor Yitzhak's been giving the pencil all period long. If I ask him for the pencil at the beginning of a period, I assume I can use it for a period. If we go to another class, it's right to say, we're going now to math, could I use it for math also? So the three events are the time to sort of sit down and say, okay, health is not for granted, parnos is not for granted, seichel is not for granted, understanding, wisdom, klal yisrael, safety is not for granted, nothing's for granted. And therefore, at the right time to note that is before an event. I want to go to another medrash and explain that in the same light. It says like this. There's a medrash in Kisavo. It says, Kisavo starts with bringing Bikurim. And the medrash says, God saw that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed. We would stop bringing Bikurim. And therefore, the rabbis instituted prayers three times a day. It seems to us kind of disjointed. I mean, generally speaking, that divine service and sacrifices are parallel to prayers, that's all over. That says it, and that's that we understand. But why pick Bikurim of the first fruits of all the mitzvahs that when that was gone, we needed prayer to substitute? And the answer is, because the sharpest moment of realization that we have for this isn't Bikurim. Bikurim is, I've worked hard, I have nothing. In Israel, you plant in Cheshvan time, you sow the ground, it's rainy, it's cold, and nothing is doing for a few months. And then things sprout. And at that moment, I go down and I say, where did it come from? It's been laying around for a few months, nothing happened. My action did nothing. Something now caused it to burst forth in life. And if you look at the Bikurim formula, you recite a formula, it's extraordinary. We start with the earliest history of Klal Yisrael, not from Mitzrayim. We say when our father Jacob was by Lavan, Lavan was about to snuff him out completely. And the Maral says, because you need to start at the point of nothingness. You need to start, where is Klal Yisrael non-existent? At that point, Lavan had the ability to totally crush us, wanted to do it, except God stopped him. So we're saying, God, we have zero. We weren't going to live. Now, you gave us everything we have from that point. So, and so if we're to look at a point in the that's built in to produce that effect in Klal Yisrael, it's Bikurim. When that's gone, we're missing a very, very serious piece of our relationship to reality. The sense of entitlement, it's mine. I don't know if you've had like baby brothers and sisters when you were old enough to perceive it. A child, as soon as they start to become active, they feel that anything that they've seen is theirs. It's sort of like, you know, it's mine. It's like, because they see it, it takes a long time, sometimes a lifetime, to realize it's not like that. You know, things have to be earned and things have to be, and so on and so forth. So Bikurim, when Bikurim became extinct, there was a need to replace it with something that would give in a person that equal sense of things. I want to branch it out to something that I think is very amiss with some of the theological presentations that we're used to. We're used to a lot of people getting up and having it out with God. I don't understand why you did this, and I don't understand why you did this, and I can't understand how you could do this, and that, and the other thing. Even people who wear a kippah, it's very in style, and, you know, the Holocaust, or Israel, or whatever it is, and people sort of get up and they sort of battle it out with God. I'm not sure who God's spokesman is, but, you know, they sort of, you know, and this is something that people feel comfortable doing, or whatever it is. Well, let's explain this. Let's just kind of think a little bit about it. There's an old Jewish joke, typical type of old Jew. Rothschild was the wealthy millionaire, and there was two brothers would come every week amongst the many, many schnurrers that Rothschild would give tzedakah to. Two would come every week, and he would give them, 10 francs each apiece for the week. And that was it. One week, only they didn't come, and the next week only one came. And Rothschild asked him, "What's the matter?" And he said, "My brother passed away last week." He said, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear." And he gave him 10 francs. And he said, "Where's the other 10 francs?" He said, "Well, he told me your brother passed away." So he drew himself up to his full height and said, "Mr. Rothschild, are you my brother's inheritor or am I his inheritor? Like, who gets to inherit my brother, you or me?" There's a certain sense of, we become so used to a gift that it's me. You know, we have a right for health. We Americans have rights. We have a right for health and wealth and happiness and pursuit of happiness, so on and so forth. What do you mean you have a right? You know, when somebody deals in a business way with somebody else, you have rights. If I worked X amount of hours, you must pay me Y amount, and you must pay me on time, and this and that, and so on and so forth. Those are real rights that exist. If I'm working for you, I have a right to get to walk off the job. It's a right. It's a halachic right. And any time we deal with tit for tat, we enshrine a lot of rights. But let's say somebody is a benefactor of institution. Let's say somebody gives the academy, I don't know, $100,000 a year. And we come down and he says, "Well, this year I'm giving only $50,000. You tell him, "Well, you have no right because we've decided to give you $100,000. And it's absurd. I mean, you won't be very good at fundraising if that's your attitude. Or you might be fantastic, I'm not sure. One or the other. But it's not going to work well. What does it mean we have it out with God? Did we participate in making ourselves? Do we have a right to exist? By what? Do we have a right for life? We don't have any right. If we lived a year, then do we need to thank him? Because it's a year that came from no place. All of those type of attitudes are built on a falsehood, on an emotional falsehood. And it's a falsehood that's very deep in us because our sense of self and possession is so deep. Tefillah is there to put things in the right perspective. Now, we do find in Tanakh where people debated God, but they didn't debate God, and that's a mistake. They had a dialogue. They turned to God and they said the following: you want us to be part of the process. You want us to understand what you're doing so that we can participate, we can change, we can do what we need to do. Help me do it. Give me some guidance and understanding. Asking God for understanding is appropriate. Debating with God is absurd. The only one who did it was Eov, and God at the end tells him, you're coming in the middle, you're barging in. I was there before you. You don't have standing. Everything that you have comes from me, whether it was children, possessions, or self, or your body. Let's wrap up the point and let's sort of get the handle on it. Tefillah is first and foremost the inculcating of a most fundamental truth about God and humans that there is. Because in the relationship of God and humans, because as a human being, I struggle between the sense of self and possession, which has its rights. Within the bubble of the world, I'm entitled. If I worked for something and earned it, no one's allowed to take it. Amongst us, on the peer level, self and possession are very, very important, and they're right. But there's a bigger piece before us. So our self and everything we possess at the most fundamental level, our knowledge, understanding, emotion, all our faculties are not us, not ours, and we're not entitled to them just kacha. Tefillah is the piece that teaches us that. And when we ask three times a day, God grant us wisdom, what we're saying is, I know that without being granted wisdom, I can think all day long, nothing's going to come up. Grant us health, because at the end of the day, it's a gift from you. And the tefillah is set up, I start by acknowledging God as being able to do it, God as being the one who brought into the world. I then ask for everything that I need. In other words, what I'm saying is, I'm not informing God, but I'm saying, could I please use some health? Could I please use some parnasa? Could I please use a Yeshua, Pekas, etc., etc.? And then I finish off with hodah, with modim, with thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and saying, I acknowledge that what I will have did come from you. And the thank you is an acknowledgement. When a person uses the world that way, he partners with God. It's just like a parent and a child. I can tell you as a parent, as a grandparent, you want to give everything to your child. You really do. But you don't want to be taken for granted. You want the child to understand that you're giving out of love, unconditional, and giving. From my end, I'm not supposed to make deals with my children. I'm not supposed to say this is for this, this is for that, and that. I think that's, I'm not, the goal is not supposed to be a deal. But it would be a transgression of a child to take it for granted and to sort of say, well, you're supposed to give it unconditionally. I once heard a rather crass young woman, I'm sorry to say so, I don't think she meant it. She was acting in a way that her grandfather did not like. And she said, well, I am testing his love for me whether it's conditional or not. I'm showing a gear or else I would have slapped her twice. What does that mean? I mean, be a mensch. I don't stand. I would like to test you if you're a mensch and acknowledge and respect the where you came from. The relationship is, yes, as a parent and as a grandparent, you're supposed to be giving and giving unconditionally with love. But the worst thing that you can be doing with that unconditional giving is when the child just sort of it takes it for granted. Then you're building a monster, not a good child. So the relationship is, if you give with love unconditionally and the child takes with appreciation and acknowledgement, you have an extraordinary beautiful relationship. That's the relationship we build with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through tefillah. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have, and that's why we're entitled to daven and say, I know you want me to be wise, and I know you want me to have what I need, and I know you want me to be healthy. This is what you want. I acknowledge that I don't deserve it, that it's coming because I don't deserve anything. Everything myself is a gift, and everything that you're giving is, I'm asking for what you would like me to have, and I'm acknowledging it's coming from you. That, in a sense, is the totality of prayer. It's a modem in the sense of acknowledgement, modem in the sense of thanks. Any questions? Anything you'd like to discuss or whatever? Okay. So thank you very much for inviting me to be participating, and I hope we all learn how to pray and build that special beautiful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you.